Welcome to episode 461 of Fly Away. Over the past few years, we've been reminded time and again how much the world relies on travel. From supporting local economies to learning about new cultures, the experience that travel provides helps to make our world smaller and bring us closer together. Here at Outlander Travel, we've been proud to be a small part of bringing that to you through our weekly podcast. My name is Sandy, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Donna, and George. And we're going back to Munich this week. So Munich Yay. Is probably best known for beer and its annual Oktoberfest, but there is so much more to do in the other 11 months out of the year. So this past summer, Elizabeth went there for a couple of days to visit, and she's got some great recommendations. So let's get started. So your first bullet point is about beer.
Right. I mean, beer is a year-round event. Don't think that it's limited to Oktoberfest. The nice thing about beer any other time than Oktoberfest is there's fewer people. So it's my kind of party. I mean, it's still busy. And actually, when we got to Hofbrauhaus, we went there first. And when we first arrived, and it was super crowded. I mean, it was hard to find a table. And, you know, at a beer garden, you share tables. But even with that, it was hard to find a table. So we did find one, though, and it was quite enjoyable. But, yeah, this is my fourth time to Munich, and I have gone to Hofbrauhaus every single time. And I know it's cheesy and touristy and all those things, but it's also very wonderful. And it's just, I always have a good time there. So
there's a lot of history there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I need to get back to Munich. So you were with one of your kids, yeah. Right?
Yes, I was with my youngest. And he asked if he's 17, and he asked if he could try a beer. I was like, this is not the place to try a beer because they are like the size of your head. You know, if you want to try a beer, you need an itty bitty beer. We're not going to get like a huge beer. He's like, well, if I don't like it, I won't drink it. I was like, I'm not going to pay for it. So, and I can't drink two of those big beers or else you're gonna have to carry me home. So, actually I probably am very capable of drinking two of those beers, but,
yeah, really
at the time I was very, I mean, I am a pro, but, the beer garden culture it's fascinating. The history is real. There are tables there. They're named after families that have had those tables for years, and you can sit at them as long as they're not expecting the family to come in. You can store your beer steins there. And I mean, it really is like in the world of libraries, we used to talk, and you hear this a lot elsewhere now too, especially after COVID, but we talk about your third place. And our goal was always to have the library be your third place. And what that means is you have work, you have home, not necessarily in that order. And then you have a third place, you know, think Cheers or, you know, your local pub or and so the beer gardens truly were a third place or are a third place for many people. And, especially in Bavaria. So, it's almost like going into somebody's really, really big, huge backyard with really rude waiters who barely talk to you, but bring you big beers. So that sum it up. I think it sums it up pretty well.
And pretzels?
Und pretzels. Pretzels okay. Und beer. Yes.
Okay.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, and food. I mean, they serve food as well. So we had Wiener Schnitzel, the pork knuckles, like the full German spread of options were there. So, you know, Marcus had a pork knuckle the size of his head. He was very happy. Good stuff.
I like German food better than I used to, but that when I was growing up, that was always what my dad wanted for like special occasions, and it was always like, God, no, please. You know,
I will say we were there for four nights, and by night four, we're like, no more German food. I need like some noodles or something.
Like a salad,
you know, it's heavy. It's very, very heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, when we were there in Germany a couple of years ago, Jeff was in the same boat. He's like, we'd been there for like 10 days. He's like, I really just want a salad. And so he ordered a salad. It was a meat salad.
Yeah, like a sausage on it. I know.
It had thick slices of like salami on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
With like a little bit of lettuce.
It's true. I mean, and it really is. After a while, you're like, I just cannot even think about eating another sausage. It's just, there's no way that I could do that. Or, you know, fried veal patty or whatever you can come up, you know, everything is just heavy, 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 heavy gravies and potatoes. Yeah. And then you have beer.
Well, I mean, it is, George.
You would not be unhappy, right? And days one and two, we were like, yeah, bring it. By day three, we're like, okay. And then four, we're like,
is there any fruit? Some grapes, maybe.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'd probably get deported for not liking beer.
Yeah.
Yes, possibly, but they'll find something else for you. Yeah.
Some wine, maybe.
And honestly, if you're ever going to, if you're not a beer drinker, you might still like the beer in Germany because it is very pure. So, that's their thing, the purity laws. And so it's four ingredients. And so it's very, it can be very light. It can be very dark, but it's very, of all the beers out there, I feel like it's tasty yet not overbearing, you know? So you could, if you like beer, then you might say, oh, this might be a little bit bland, but it's still, I still think it's kind of tasty. Would you agree, Donna? I mean, I still think German beer is kind of, it's good.
Well, the thing is about German beer, it doesn't have, it's not like overwhelmingly hopped like US beers. And so it's a cleaner taste. It's got less aftertaste but it's malty and just stick to your ribs and yummy. Yes.
Yeah, and refreshing, you know.
Yes. And I mean, even at lunchtime, they give you these like little baby beers that are about, 6 ounces, 5 ounces. So you can have a little beer with lunch and, you know, not be hungover.
Or stumbling, yeah.
Or stumbling, yeah, when you go to the Hopper House and get a full liter.
That's what you should have gotten, Marcus, a little baby beer.
They didn't have baby beer.
They don't have them at the Hofbräuhaus. You have to go to restaurants for that.
He really wanted to try a Radler, which would have been fine, but he generally doesn't like fizzy drinks. And so I was like, even though it's fruity, I still don't think you're going to really like it. And I don't like Radlers, so I'm definitely not going to drink the remainder. So, yeah. And then later on, he got mad. He was like, you wouldn't let me try a beer. I was like, no. You're remembering it wrong. I was going to have you to try my beer.
Yeah, you should have just kept asking.
I'm not going to buy you a whole big beer. Yeah, no. Right. Yes.
Yeah, at every place. Yeah. So it looks like you did some castles too. So
like we how did. Far away? This is Marcus's first.
This is a day trip, right? This is like a.
Yeah, it's a full day trip. Yeah. Neuschwanstein's about an hour and a half away from Munich, depending on, you know, how you drive it and when you drive it for traffic. This is a day trip I've done before. Actually, this trip is one that I pretty much have done. I did it with Chris years ago, and this was Marcus's first time. So I was like, well, let's go do all the things that I've already done before show them all to Marcus because he was really interested. So this day trip, I really like. It's actually from Gray Line Tours. You can book it lots of different ways. Almost all of our vendors carry some version of it. And there's a regular version, and then there's a premium version. And and one of our colleagues was there as well, and she booked really late. So she got the premium, whereas Brooke and I booked way ahead, and we saved money and got the regular one. I kind of wish we'd done the premium because the premium one actually went to Neuschwanstein first and then went to Oberammergau and then Linderhof Castle, whereas we did Linderhof, Oberammergau, and then Neuschwanstein. So by the time we got to Neuschwanstein, it was super crowded. Mm-hmm. And a new development from when I was there a decade ago is they have a bus that will shuttle you up to just below where that bridge is, where you can take that famous picture that you've seen a million times of Neuschwanstein from up and behind the castle. And before that was a pretty steep hike. And so I didn't do that 10 years ago when I was there. I didn't go up to that bridge. And I was told that it's a steel bridge and it's a little bit, you know, it's high. So if you have a fear of heights, you're going to be nervous, but it's not a swinging bridge or anything like that. Well, had I been out on that bridge by myself or maybe with 10 other people, I probably could have handled it. But the slats on it is steel, but then there's wood, like a wood walkway, and those slats move.
Oh.
And there were 200 people on this bridge. So I took 4 steps out onto the bridge and I was like, nope. And I turned right back around. I was like, there is no picture in the world that is worth me falling from this high up because 200 people are on this bridge and it collapses. Of course, that doesn't happen. It's a very strong bridge, but I couldn't handle it. So the kids went out and took pictures for me. And then
The fearless children.
Yeah. The fearless children. Yeah. But Marcus actually has a fear of heights, and he was like, yeah, it was hard, Mom, but I got out there and took a picture and then came back. So the bus, the ability to shuttle up there is nice, because it used to either be hike or take the horse and carriage, which was a very long wait. I did the hike before, but in my physical condition now, I would have a really hard time doing that hike up the hill for a mile. So being able to take the bus up and then hike down was really nice. And to be able to get to that bridge, which I would not have been able to reach before, even with my hiking, you know, you do have to walk uphill once you get off the bus, but not very far. So it's doable. So I highly recommend it, but if you can get to Neuschwanstein a bit earlier in the day, and just for background, if you don't know what Neuschwanstein is, other than the fact that it inspired Walt Disney to build his castles, it's King Ludwig II, who was an eccentric king, built these castles, and it is literally perched on top of a mountain. It's like an impossible construction project. It was never finished. It's beautiful from the outside, but there's barely anything in there. He lived in two or three rooms inside. There's just not very much inside. It's basically an open shell of a castle. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to warn people about that. Yeah. Because people get really disappointed. They think it's like a full Sleeping Beauty castle, and it is not. It's actually kind of sad to go in. I mean, he was crazy. He did live for a very long time in a castle right next door, which I have yet to visit. It isn't usually included in most tours, but if you're in the area, you can go tour it. And then Linderhof was the castle that he spent a lot of time in. Very small castle, very interesting castle, very ornate, but only it's like six rooms, maybe eight rooms total. It's basically a square that you can walk around. And I was fascinated by that the first time I went. So that's why I like this tour, because it doesn't just go to Neuschwanstein, but it also goes to Linderhof and then also Oberammergau, which is the site of the very famous Passion Play that happens every 10 years or so, unless COVID happens, and then it's more like 12.
Unless it ironically gets postponed for a plague.
Yes, for a plague. But it's a cute little town otherwise, and very romantic, and you know, the architecture is super adorable, and so it's a good chance to stop there just and see it when it's not the center of the universe. Like it is every 10 years. So I really enjoyed that tour a lot. So I was happy to do it a second time, but I do think the premium upgrade is worth it now that I really know what it's about, what the differences are.
Yeah. I mean, getting there early is always key, right? So that's cool.
For sure. And then it's fewer people on the bus. So you have more space to spread out, and then free beer and wine. So, well, included beer and wine, you know, free in the sense that you already paid for it, or you paid more. And they even put out a little red carpet outside the door when you're getting on the bus, so you feel super special. I mean, it's really cute. And they were probably back about half an hour before us as well, so it's nice.
This is, if any of our listeners are familiar with Soarin' Around the World at Epcot, this is the castle that's featured in there too. And it shows that bridge. It kind of turns you towards that bridge you were talking about.
Yeah, you can see people standing on that bridge, yeah.
Yeah. It looks far away.
Yeah. It is kind of. I mean, it is. It's all perspective, though, right? A lot of that is height, and yeah. It's not that far.
There's a village down there called Schwan.
Yes.
And there's some really nice little Christmas stores in there, so.
Cute.
Yeah.
So talk about, is it Dachau?
No, it's Dachau.
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 Yeah.
Okay.
One of the many work camps, concentration camps, that have been turned into museums / memorials. And this one, it's the only one I've been to, so I can't compare. But the guide, both on this visit and the visit that I did before, point out that sort of each one that's been set up as a memorial tries to tell sort of a different perspective of the, or a different angle on the story. And this one is much more about being a memorial. This camp wasn't as deadly as many, not that it wasn't deadly, it was absolutely, but they had gas chambers, but they were built very late in the process and weren't used very often. In fact, they're not sure they were used more than a few times. So this one is set up more as a quiet place of memory and sort of reflection. Whereas a place like Auschwitz is a little bit more designed to make you understand how horrible this was. Again, not that Dachau doesn't explain that clearly, but it's just a more quiet, serene kind of, it's more reflective, I think, rather than in your face. It's almost been emptied out. They only have a few buildings left that they've either recreated, but it's mostly open ground now. A lot of the buildings have come down, were torn down. But it's still, for, especially in my case, this is also the first concentration camp that Marcus has visited as a museum. And I feel like it is an excellent way for them to see this without it being just completely overwhelming right. for a younger visitor. I mean, I still wouldn't take an 8-year-old, and I would question even a 10 to 12-year-old.
They basically, when all the tours that I was looking at, because Alex was 10 at the time, they said minimum age is 12, and they will not take anybody less than 12 into there.
Okay. So that may be new, or I might be have forgotten, because now that my kids are older, I don't focus on it as much. I did have somebody who wanted to take her 12-year-old, and we had a very long conversation about whether or not that would be the best thing for her to do. And so it all depends on you and your family background and your kids' mental health as well, and how much they internalize those things. So I will say, this time I didn't get as much out of the visit as I did the first time, not because I'd already been there, but because it is a requirement in schools in Germany for high school students to go to one of these camps as a school trip. And we were right at the end of the school year, so there were a lot of school groups there getting it in before the year was over. And teenagers, although it is good that they do require it of their students, teenagers aren't there to learn anything. And so they were just loud, and you couldn't really hear very well. It's a lot of open space. And I don't mean to be a grumpy old lady, but it was very distracting. It was very hard to get anything out of it. I could barely hear what the tour guide was saying. And you really do need a guide, because there is so little there. You really need somebody to help point out what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. So I would say I got so much more out of it going in March than I did in July. If you can avoid going right at the end of the school year in Germany, which is in mid-July, then you might have a better experience, because getting in with those tour groups you can imagine it would be true with any, if you had just buses and buses of people coming in, no matter how old they are, it's not as good an experience. So that was a little, I was a little disappointed that Marcus didn't get as much out of it on his first visit as I did. But I'm sure he will experience more World War II history, and he took it very seriously, I will say. So,
yeah, and he might, just having been there, when he actually starts learning about that in school, it'll click a little more, like resonate. So,
yeah, he's been asking to go for a few years, because he really was into World War II history a lot more, and he was kind of very shocked and appalled by the fact that it could happen. And that's sort of the ideal time to take someone, really, is to say, this really can happen. Mm-hmm. And we don't want it to ever happen again. But the timing wasn't right for us as a family to go. And so I was glad to get him there, but it was very frustrating that it was so loud and difficult to move around. It's also very hot. There's no shade there. So it's best to go when it's not quite so warm too, I think. Just go no matter what, whenever you're there. But if you have a choice, that would be my suggestion.
Sounds like March is the time if you're not there for
October. Yeah, I really liked March. It was nice and cool in the mountains too for the castle. So that hike was a lot easier as well.
Yeah. So where did you guys stay? Did you pay a little more to stay more central, or?
No, we actually didn't. But the thing is, so there's a chain of hotels that I didn't know before, and they have a fairly new property there that we stayed at. It was really adorable, kind of I would say 3.5, maybe a 4-star hotel. I guess it's a 4-star hotel. Kind of reminded me of, I don't know, in a loft or something like that. Cute theming. I mean, it's called Book. And so it's all about like literary works, and each floor was a different point of literary history, you know, medieval literature, or, you know, and so had quotes up on the wall and things like that. So I nerded out over that. It was about three blocks back from the train station. And if you've ever been to Munich, if you haven't, I have to warn you, being near the central train station is wonderful because you're near the central train station, but it is not the prettiest part of town. It seems a little sketchy at times, although it isn't really, but it seems kind of sketchy. It doesn't give you the best impression of Munich. The train station itself is an eyesore. The people of Munich will tell you that. It's this like 70s architecture. It's just not great to look at. But at the same time, there are beautiful hotels right there as well. And so really, you can sort of find anything in your budget in that area, but you need to know when you're getting off the train that it's not the prettiest section of Munich. But if you go to the prettiest section of Munich, then you're kind of far away from a lot of things. So it was the ideal location. And to me, this is one of those times where I would stay there, even though it's not the best neighborhood, and I would just upgrade my hotel or downgrade my hotel based on my budget. There isn't a loft right across the street from the train station that I probably will stay in next time. I looked at it, I considered it, and then I waited too long and the rate had gone up. And so trying this new hotel was great, but it was a few blocks further away. There's laundry close by. There's all sorts of bars and restaurants, but again, not the prettiest section of Munich. It's very, I don't know, it's very urban. It's like a couple of blocks of downtown, you know, city. There's no green there. It's not, you know, it's just not super pretty. And so most people that I've sent to Munich sort of come back and they say, you know, I got to tell you, that train station area, it's not very great. I'm like, I know, I do know that. And I tell people that, but they forget. It's at the train station, so it's super convenient. So to me, it's worth it, but you just sort of have to have yourself prepared that you're going to get off the train and it's not going to be, oh, this beautiful little Bavarian town.
You know? How much do you use the train? Did you take it like from the airport and to restaurants and stuff? Did you use it to get around town?
So we did not take the train because we had copious amounts of luggage, but you can take the train to and from. There's also good buses, a bus system. We took the train a little bit, and I was there with Brooke, who I believe will be on our podcast in a few weeks. She lives over there now. She's an expat living over there. So I also had the added benefit of having basically a tour guide who knows the S-Bahn from the U-Bahn. And by the way, Bahn means train, B-A-H-N. S-Bahn is the one that runs above ground, and U-Bahn is the one that runs underground. So it is pretty easy to figure out once you know, sort of the code words. But the underground system is like it's a subway system underground, and sometimes you can actually walk quite a ways before you get to the part of the station that you need for your train. But it's a good underground system. Being near the train station, though, is good if Munich is a stop in your itinerary where you need to get on and off the train. Like maybe you're going from Switzerland to Munich and then Munich to Nuremberg and then Nuremberg on, you know, if you're doing that, then it's great. But also if you've got tours leaving, they're generally going to leave from right in that central area. And then if you want to go out to say the Olympic Park or the BMW Museum, which is actually right next to the Olympic Park, or the English Garden, or other parts of the city, it's very easy to catch public transportation to those places too. We did take the train out to Dachau. So, you can do that. You also can take regular public transportation, I think at least out to Oberammergau, but I might be making that up. I've usually taken a tour bus out there, so I'm sure there's a way somehow. And there are, you know, to the Oktoberfest grounds or whatever, it's really nice to be near the train station for sure.
Do they have...
Sort of like being near Grand Central Station.
Do they do Uber in Germany? Or something like Uber?
Yes. We didn't think they did. I'm sorry, I had to think about that because I went to several locations and I'm like, which ones used it and which ones didn't? So Brooke actually told us that they didn't have Uber in Munich. Jen, who was Jennifer, was there at the same time, and she did use Uber. But if I recall, it was very expensive. She switched over to the train system. I don't think they're very friendly to Uber there, right, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Like I said, Brooke didn't think they even had it, so I think it's fairly new.
Yeah,
they have Uber Eats, but for
Hungary
drivers.
Hungary had like Bolt or something. Bolt. They had something different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was how you called taxis too. Well, Rome was like that too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of places in Iceland, that's also true. There, you call taxis using an app that acts, I mean, it's like an Uber-esque app, but it's taxis. So
that's, I don't know. Yeah. Taxis should do that if they want to compete.
They do in a lot of places. Yeah. People stop thinking about them. I take taxis all the time still. And people think I'm weird. I'm like, there's a taxi stand right there. Why would I wait for an Uber when I could just jump in a taxi? Yeah. So, yeah.
That's true. So did you guys visit some German laundromats? Is that a code word for something? Or is it really laundromats?
Yes, we did. No, it was actually the laundromat. No, I love telling this because long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away, we had Heidi on our show. And Heidi has traveled extensively on, and she usually does train trips. So she almost always finds a laundromat somewhere along the way on her trips because she's also somebody who packs just in a carry-on.
Yes.
And so So she used to talk about how confusing the German laundromats were. And I was like, oh, ha, ha, how bad can it be? Well, let me tell you, it's confusing. Like there were 20 settings on these machines, and these were public machines. And, so there were signs in English, but they were still a little bit hard to understand. And the soap machine was very confusing. It was all controlled like in a one panel. Once you learned how to do it, it's super easy. But learning how to do it was very intimidating. So we actually formed this like chain of Good Samaritans where there were some Canadians in there when I got there. And they had been there a few days before doing some of their laundry. And the owner of the laundromat had taught them how to do it. So they taught us how to do it. And then another couple came in. So we taught them how to do it. And then as we were leaving, they were teaching another family that had just come in. So you just want to time it so that you're there sort of not first. And there should be somebody there who can then teach you how to do it because it is mysterious. And even Google Translate doesn't really help because the settings are just, you know, you're like, well, what does this mean? Why would I do it this way? When do I want to use the cold wash versus, and it seems way more complicated than just your cold wash on your machine at home. So definitely encourage you to do your laundry in Munich, but I definitely encourage you to have your German dictionary handy and hopefully somebody else who knows how the machines work.
Some Google Translate. So you had to go somewhere not in your hotel. There wasn't like a...
Correct. Yeah. Our hotel was a 4-star, so they didn't have... I mean, they might have had takeaway laundry service, but it was going to cost a fortune.
Yeah.
And I will say that the laundry was super inexpensive. I mean, you know, to go... pop some money in for, you know, a few loads of laundry. I think we had two or three wash loads. Maybe just two. They had different sizes. So they pointed out which ones are the bigger ones and we were able to do two loads of laundry at the same time and then two dryers at the same time. So we would have been out of there in an hour, but we didn't realize one of the dryers we had put them in wasn't actually working. It wasn't heating. So we had to stay another 20 minutes to, get those clothes dry, but it was quite pleasant. I mean, yeah, it was literally right around the corner from our hotel. So less than a block. Super easy.
Nice. All right. So what's Maximilianstrasse?
Oh, you said that very well. Actually.
Did I?
Yes.
I am part German, actually.
Yeah. So, you probably didn't say it as well as a German would, but so Maximilianstrasse is the, you say as well as I do. It's sort of the ritzy street, I guess you would say. It's where the finest hotels are. It's where the most expensive shops are. So it's a place where you tend to window shop, but it's part of sort of the royal mile. So this is where a lot of the shops that catered to the kings and served the palace were located just here or just off of it. But now it houses Gucci and Hermes and places like that. But there's also, it's a very active and lively area too. So we went to go eat and do a little window shopping and there was a protest going on. And it's funny because we came around the corner and we're like, what is going on? And Brooke and Henry, her son, were like, oh, it's a protest. There's one like every day here. The Germans will protest anything. So it was kind of interesting though to see, you know, it was very organized, very peaceful, lots of shouting and, you know, in German. And I didn't know what they were talking about. But from what we could determine, it had something to do with COVID and something to do with the war in Ukraine. And it was almost like they weren't related necessarily, but it was like, well, while we're here protesting the one thing, we're going to protest the other thing too, because we're still mad about that. So I think it was more about Ukraine, but there was still some anti-COVID sentiments. I'm not even going to say anti-vax, but sort of a, you know, COVID isn't really a thing and, you know, we overreacted to it and now our world is ruined because of it. So that's sort of, that was the gist we got.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was interesting. I definitely encourage, like, don't shy away when things like that happen. Don't jump in, but you know, watch and listen and talk to people. Cause we learned a lot actually. Just being there and taking it all in. So.
Yeah. Whenever I
and
was,
that in, was where we had the best food too.
When I was in Belgium, there was a protest and the tour guide like stopped someone and asked what they were protesting so that she could explain to us. Yeah, I guess they like to protest in Belgium too.
Yeah. Well, and I assume she speaks the language, so that's interesting that she had to ask. But you know, Brooke and Henry speak enough to piece it together. But
yeah, I mean, it wasn't. They were just marching. It wasn't like they were holding signs and yelling and screaming. You know, so we didn't know why they were marching. But yeah,
okay, well, that makes sense. Cool. Yeah, so I mean, four times I've been to Munich now, and I would go again in a heartbeat. It was really great, and it was really good to take my youngest. We also did the BMW Museum. Highly recommend that. It was a much better experience this time than it was the first time I went. I think I get more out of it every time. I certainly like cars a little bit more now than I did.
Now you drive a BMW.
Going to Munich. So. Now I drive one. Well, and that museum is part of the reason I do. Like that's part of what made me want them is learning more about how they're made. And yeah, so there you go. That's the influence that museum has had on me.
That's cool. I know I need to go back because my dad said that sad little line to me when I was there. He's like, I always said I'd go back and I never did. I'm like, I'm going, Dad. I'm going back. So
you will. I'll go with you if you want, because I love that place.
We should. We should go next March. Let's just do it. Yeah. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. On behalf of Elizabeth, Donna, George, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.